Welcome to episode 120 of Breakout Culture. I'm Ed Vasey and I'm the culture editor at Country and Townhouse magazine.
And I'm Charlotte Metcalf, the associate editor at Country and Townhouse. And today we're going to be looking ahead to some of the summer season's best festivals, incorporating everything from music and comedies to big ideas. Glastonbury, Wilderness and other big annual festivals aside, there are suddenly festivals covering everything, everywhere, all at once, from the medieval festival at Arundel Castle to multiple food festivals. So we've picked out a few that might be less mainstream, but that we really like the look of.
Yes. First in London, there's the Idler Festival, which happens between the 7th and 9th of July in Hampstead. The Idler is going to be taking over Fenton House, which has a wonderful ornamental garden and orchard. For those of you who don't know it, The Idler is a magazine designed to make us all slow down, dawdle and embrace some really interesting ideas. Headlining the festival is the author of Trainspotting, Irvin Welsh, who is in conversation with The Idler's editor, Tom Hodgkinson. But there's also Kath Kitston talking about business for bohemians, Anil Seth on neuroscience, and William Dalrymple talking about the cultural links between India and Iran. There'll be comedy from Adam Buxton, Sindhu V, Sally Phillips, Arthur Smith, Ben Pope, and poet Murray Lachlan Young, and lots more.
Yes, and now Cheltenham has its annual music festival between the 8th and the 15th of July in venues all over the town. Highlights include world premieres of new music by James B. Wilson, Suzanne Lava and Eileen Sweeney. There's going to be a musical tour of Cheltenham's private drawing rooms to celebrate Bird's 400th anniversary and platforms for young artists, including BBC Young Musician winners. There are electronic programmes, the popular mixtape event and lots, lots more. Today, though, we're turning our attention to three festivals: the Byline Times Festival, the Henley Festival, and the Festival of the Garden at Charleston.
And our guests today are Otto English, who founded the Byline Times Festival, Joe Bowser, who's worked at the Henley Festival for 10 years and is now the chief executive, and Henry Hoblin, who has the wonderful job of being the head gardener at Charleston. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, and it's wonderful to have you all on. Now, we're going to start with you, Otto, because we have a bit of a vested interest in you and the Byline Times, as Country and Townhouse is going to be collaborating with you in the future, so our readers will be able to see some of your thought-provoking pieces. So can you start by telling us about the festival, because it's making a big claim to be a weekend of ideas as well as a lot of fun that can change the world for the better.
Yes, I should just add that I'm not the founder of the festival. I've been largely promoted there. I'm happy to have things added to my CV, but I'm as somebody who writes books about fake history and fake politics, I think I better get in quick on that one before someone puts it out. It was actually founded by Stephen Colgrave and Peter Jukes, the founders of the Byline Times newspaper. Obviously, with COVID over the last 2 years, we had a much slimmed down version of the festival in Notting Hill last year. Oh, I mean, it feels like about a decade ago because of we were all still masked up. And so this is the sort of big chance to sort of bounce back and enjoy life and conversation and big conversations all over again. Yes. So if past events are anything to go by, it will genuinely be a brilliant talking shop. So there are sort of regular names like Joe Scanlon, the actor, Rosie Holt, the sort of online phenomenon, is coming this year. And the big event always at the Byline Festival is the Bad Press Awards, when we dish out fake awards to those who have excelled themselves in being terrible journalists over the previous year. And in addition, there's always sort of good conversations. So we've got Peter Oborne coming, we've got Bonnie Greer, and I think there's even going to be the debut performance of a play that I think Peter Jukes has been working on called Putin's Trojan Horse. Which kind of speaks, does what it says on the tin.
Oh, amazing.
And you're going to be in Devon at the Dartington Trust, is that right?
That's right, yeah, Dartington Hall, a medieval hall in Devon, yeah.
It's beautiful, I've been there, it's absolutely beautiful.
I mean, it's a fairly left-wing, you may think you've bought me off with Peter Oborne on the right, but, you know, Marina Perkis, Dawn Butler, You know, Rishnara Ali, despite being a great friend.
I think you're absolutely right. I think one of the problems is balance. You know, we had this conversation last year and the previous festival 3 years ago. I mean, 3 years ago, the country was locked in the sort of end game of a sort of ongoing Brexity civil war. And I remember people saying on stage, we need more balance. We need more from the other side. So, yeah, I agree with you. It'd be great to broaden it out.
What's Bonnie Greer going to be talking about? Because I made a film with Bonnie Greer about 9/11, of all things.
Well, I've seen Bonnie in action. And Bonnie is, as you know, then, is one of the most articulate human beings in this country. I suspect Bonnie Greer will be talking largely about the excitements of the last year, and I think hasn't she got a book out? I believe so. There you go. That's me being badly prepared at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning.
You are on top of your game.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ed.
Now let's turn to something completely different. Let's now turn to Joe. Amazing, Henley. I mean, I just can't believe for a small town you really are punching above your weight. I mean,
we really do. Yeah.
I mean, look at who you've got on. Just first of all, I mean, it's branded the UK's only boutique black tie festival. So tell us a bit more about that and about some of the incredible acts you've got.
Well, we've been going. This is our 41st year, actually, this year. So we follow straight on from Henley Royal Regatta. And I think 41 years ago, somebody had the bright idea that all these tents were put up just for 6 days. And why not do something after it, which was obviously a good idea. And it started off as a classical event, but obviously it's grown and grown due to, you know, what the audience wants. And we call ourselves a music and arts festival. And increasingly, we've been able to pull in some of the big names, which is great for, as you say, our little town in Henley. We've had Elton John, we've had Lionel Richie. This year, we've got Rag and Bone Man, which everybody's looking forward to. Nile Rodgers, Westlife. We build a stage on the river, so it's called the Floating Stage. So it really is unique.
And you've got amazing comedy. You've got Joe Brand, Marcus yes. Brigstock, Jack yes. D, Adam Kay.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absolutely... How do you get all these people? I mean, you just got everybody. Like the
well, they all live there, Charlotte.
Do they?
They're also rich. They've bought their estates in Henley.
Oh, do you know what? Sadly, I'm not driving around in a Lamborghini. I think our comedy's grown a lot over the last 10 years, and often the big names use us as a warm-up for Edinburgh, which is great. And obviously, because we've been going so long, we have really well-established relationships with all the agents, music and comedy. So that's great. They all know Henley. The artists love coming to Henley Festival because it is so different. You know, they can't believe that they're looking out to a load of people in black tie at a festival, which is, I know, sounds weird, but you need to come and experience it. So we're looking forward to that. Jack D especially for me, actually.
Oh, so just before we come back to you and talk about all the visual arts that are on and all that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Harry, good morning. Head gardener at Charleston. What a wonderful job. Tell us about the garden, Festival of the Garden at beautiful, beautiful Charleston.
Well, like you say, it's a very lovely place to work on. I'm very fortunate to have the chance to garden there. So I feel a bit resentful and a bit reluctant to be indoors right at the moment on Zoom. So as you know, Charleston's kind of the Sussex home of the Bloomsbury Group. And the Festival of the Garden was conceived in kind of 2018. And originally it was an idea of kind of having a festival that talks more specifically about gardening. But as it's evolved over the past few years, and specifically since the pandemic, it's kind of become a festival where we talk about land, farming, gardening as well, of course, and water. For example, we've got talks on our waterways this year, but also how that kind of connects with art, poetry, writing, literature, and social issues as well. So there's a real kind of range of speakers, and it's really just a place for discourse and discussion. So in the past, we've had live music as well from folk artists such as Sam Lee. And last year, we had Pete Udorf, sort of the world-renowned landscape designer. We've had Arthur Parkinson and Sarah Raven talking about their cut flower growing and their books. So, yeah, just a continuation of that discourse and kind of irreverence as well. So it's kind of the setting is in this old kind of dusty farmyard where we actually, in the wake of the pandemic, built a very colourful stage. So it's usually kind of the main stage is sort of up to sort of 250 capacity, where we have speakers. This year we've got Jamaica Kincaid, the Antiguan American writer, coming over to talk about her books and her interest and connection between writing and gardening. We've also got Sarah Price, who just designed a lovely Nurture Landscapes garden for Chelsea. Jake Fiennes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Jake Fiennes, who I think...
Jake Fiennes, who's been a guest on our podcast.
Yes, he has.
Who says he's not the Gordon Ramsay of conservation management, I hear. But
he does swear quite a lot,
exactly. Isabel Bannerman, another garden designer who writes beautifully about gardens, and I've got one of her books, Scent Magic, just in front of me, actually.
It's a beautiful book, isn't it? Tell our listeners a bit about it, if for those who haven't seen it, because it is an absolutely exquisite book.
Yeah, well, so she's published a couple of books on scent specifically. One's The Star Knows More. The one I'm more familiar with is Scent Magic, where effectively she sort of talks you through the gardening year and describes different plants in different ways, but also from a very kind of sort of familiar perspective. And it's just really delightful to kind of talk of the way she'd be talking about roses at this time of year and the different scents that they give off. And it's just spectacular. She writes very beautifully, and obviously along with her husband, Mr. B, has obviously had an amazing relationship to plants and nature over the last, you know, course of her life.
And beautiful photographs she always has, doesn't she? Especially in the mole book. Those photographs were incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she does a lot of the photography herself as well. So again, it's just about nurturing that connection to with the plants she grows.
The potter Edmund de Vaule talking about decay. What's all that about?
Yeah, exactly. So he's released a book in collaboration with Norman McBeef called Perdon Dosi, which is all about decay. And I think it's about basically the sort of transformation of a leaf into something like parchment. So he's going to be kind of discussing, yeah, the impact of decay and perhaps how we feel about decay as well. I mean, I suppose sort of senescence in the gardening world is something that's becoming more and more talked about. So I guess that's kind of, there's a parallel there drawn between perhaps gardening, but also, you know, the art and the literature attached to decay effectively.
That sounds great. I mean, I went to the Chelsea Flower Show and I noticed the sort of fashion now for wilding gardens and so on. I mean, that is
weeds
everywhere. It is interesting. Yeah. It's interesting how fashions in gardens change. So we're moving on from wild gardens to decaying gardens now.
Yeah, I think so. But also, there's lots of considerations with regard to things like drought tolerant planting now. So we've got Dan Pearson talking with the head gardener Troy Scott Smith from Sissinghurst, and they've created this amazing garden. I think it's been its third summer now, which is based on Vita Sackville-West had this initial idea to create a Delos garden, so sort of a replication of the Isle of Delos here in Sussex. And so that's kind of 3 years on now, and it's very much a sort of drought-resilient garden. And they'll be talking about how that's developed and how that was conceived and where the plants came from. They worked with an amazing nurseryman from France, a lot called Olivier Philippi. So I think, yeah, all those different themes. And also we have lots of workshops as well. So there's some free fringe events as well, which are kind of head gardeners and assistant gardeners, really many from sort of friends of mine from the local area who come along and sort of give advice on, you know, like you say, how to keep up with the trends, but also how to just the garden more responsibly, I suppose, and perhaps using less water and encouraging more weeds.
I bet the Sissinghurst talk is absolutely packed out because it's so beautiful, Sissinghurst. And in fact, one of the nicest evenings I've ever been to was I went on a tour of the gardens with Sarah Raven and Juliet Nicholson. It was absolutely glorious, beautiful evening. And then we all had dinner in the garden. It was just so lovely.
Like you say, Sissinghurst is a very romantic place. Well, Charleston is too, so please come along.
Can I ask, where do people stay in Charleston? I was there quite recently. I would say this as someone coming from Lewisham, it feels quite remote.
I mean, I suppose Charleston is fairly remote, and obviously we're kind of nestled in the foot of the Downs. And in some regards, in the past, has been quite inaccessible, but we've just, the Highways Agency have just completed and finalised a new cycle route between Lewis and Eastbourne. So if you're looking to come down on the train from London, then bring your bicycle and cycle along, or if not, just walk along the Downs. But there's certainly places to stay, perhaps in the local villages or Lewis or even Brighton, which isn't too far afield.
God, how lovely. Well, coming back to you now, Otto, you're setting out to change the world with these ideas. So what in your mind is the biggest, most exciting, controversial talk do you think that's going to happen at the festival?
Changing the world is a very Peter Jukes way of looking at a festival, if anybody knows who Peter is. And that's a fairly large ambition. I think we're living in this extraordinary moment in many respects this immediate post-pandemic moment and sort of the end of really what looks like the end of this period of chaotic government. So when we say change the world, I suppose we should talk about changing our little corner of it. And I think from a political point of view and from a social point of view, we do stand on the edge of a whole sort of spaghetti strand of roads that we can now go down. I wrote quite a lot of pieces when the pandemic happened about the other pandemic, the pandemic of 1918 to 1920. What was extraordinary about that era was how quickly it got forgotten, how quickly everybody, despite millions and millions of people having died in the 1918-20/21 pandemic, everyone kind of conspired to forget it. There was almost no mention of it in popular culture. Very few books or poems were written about it. Although, interestingly, T.S. Eliot's Wasteland, many people consider that actually as a poem about that pandemic, or a series of poems about that pandemic. And so I think there will be a lot of discussion around that, a lot of discussion of how we now move on, both from the pandemic and from the political chaos of the last 6 and 7 years. I mean, that obviously 3 years ago, when we had the last proper festival, which there was a festival last year, but the big one that we had 3 years ago, Boris was just coming to, it was 2019. He was just on the brink of becoming prime minister. I think we've had about 42 prime ministers since then. I've lost count roughly how many we've had, but since. And so there was a huge debate, and I remember being on a discussion panel, is Boris Johnson going to be our Donald Trump? And how prescient that one was. So I suppose that's what we do at Byline. We have these sort of big topic conversations, and then we see where we go. I think that's the best way of describing it. And it's very inclusive. Obviously, we're always inviting the audience in for their range of comments and things like that. Quite how the world will change, of course, is unknown. But throwing ideas into the pool is always interesting. That's where people like Bonnie Greer and Peter Oborne always deliver, because they've always got the bigger ideas.
Mm. But you yourself, I mean, you've been called an anti-Brexit firebrand and a woke activist by Dominic Zambrook. And
I love it. Yes, it's. I mean, you know, people think I'm some kind of lunatic. I hope I'm not coming across as such. I think, yeah, I wasn't really a sort of anti-Brexit firebrand. I think all I have done during the last 5 or 6 years is sort of point at the naked emperor. Brexit to me seemed like such a bad idea at the time. And I think people like myself who said it and who continued to say it and who weren't afraid to keep saying it have been proved right. However, Brexit has happened. So I'm not some denialist of what has happened. And we have this country needs to, I'm going to sound like a really bad politician here, this country needs to come together and move on from Brexit and sort of see what happens next. And I think that will be very much the focus of the Byline Festival. And again, 3 years ago, everybody said, oh, this is a Remainers festival and whatever. But what was really interesting was that a lot of people on the stage, including myself at the time, were saying there's no going back to the EU at the moment. It's a fantasy to say that that's going to happen. So it's what do we do with what we've got rather than keep looking backwards the whole time.
Oh, you sound just like a pound shop politician.
I know, yes.
It's unbelievable.
But it is true, isn't it? There is no going back into the EU. That's fantasy land. I know that some people in the sort of rejoin camp who will be there at the festival won't like people like me saying that. But it is the idea of trying to have some sort of campaign or referendum to return to the EU would cause so much chaos That's not a path I think anybody would want to go down. What I would like, and what I think would benefit this country, would be for us to have a much closer relationship with the EU and patch up all the problems that we've had.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Joe, going back to you, tell us about the art installations that you're doing, because this is all very new and exciting and high tech and all the rest of it, because you're in partnership with a tech company, aren't you, for this festival?
Yes, we are. They're one of our headline sponsors. I mean, art's always been a really big part of Henley. We've got obviously such a beautiful backdrop. It's a natural gallery to display sculpture and art. But yeah, we've got West Coast, who are our headline sponsor, and we've got introducing this year a lot more technology into the art strand of the festival, which will be great because obviously we need to move forward. There'll be a lot of graphical content. We've got something late night that hopefully is going to go in the middle of the river, if I can make that work, which will be amazing and hasn't been done before. So yeah, there's a lot going on art and sculpture wise.
And you've got amazing fireworks and amazing food as well. I mean, it just sounds fab.
Yes, I can't compete on an intellectual level with the other two gentlemen of the festivals, but with fun, I think we can probably, we're probably up there. Yeah, we have a lot of different food offerings. There's goes from fine dining, 5-course tasting menus, down to just street food and grazing. So there's sort of something for everyone. You don't have to sit there all evening and have lots of courses. You can just wander around with lots of stuff. We've got sushi, we've got Mexican, everything really. Everything you could want in a night out, we can offer.
And people really do come in black tie, do they?
Yes, they do. I know it's a bit weird, but it's been happening for 40 years. And it's, you know, I think actually we encourage people to be part of the theatre of it all. And actually, I think people really rise to the occasion, especially after the pandemic. We've really noticed the last couple of years, everybody's made such a massive effort to dress up because, of course, nobody could for ages.
No. I think one of the lovely things about all three of your festivals, they're in such beautiful places. I actually went to a funeral in Dartington Hall.
Yes, one of those places where you feel like time has almost stood still, isn't it? It's a remarkably beautiful spot, yes. And I will be staying in the hall, so I'm very excited about that. On a personal level.
Well, I think they all sound absolutely wonderful. We will obviously have all the details of where all these festivals are. Just quickly before we let you all go, just tell us the date.
It's the 14th to the 16th of July. But as I say, it's currently sold out, although I did just look at the website and there might be a few last minute tickets available closer to the time.
Oh, and Joe?
We're the 5th to the 9th of July. There's a few tickets for a couple of nights left.
Oh, and Harry?
Yeah, 13th to the 16th of July. And there's still a few tickets left for various things.
Oh, well, fantastic. Good luck with all of it. Thank you very, very much indeed, everybody. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the Royal Shakespeare Company and all the exciting plays they've got in store for us this summer, including lots of new plays. We'll be talking to the fated director, Erica Wyman, who's also the deputy artistic director at the RSC, about directing the adaptation of Maggie O'Farrell's Hamnet and about the 37 new playwrights they've selected from a nationwide search. Plus, we'll be talking to the actress Tanya Katyal, who plays the character of Rani in Tanit Gupta's The Empress. So don't fail to tune in.
That's it for another episode of Breakout Culture, but please don't forget to visit countryandtownhouse.com, where you'll find the latest edition of the magazine and our sister podcast, House Guest with Carol Annette, on which she talks to some of the most fascinating and influential names in interior design. If you enjoyed today, please make sure you follow us or subscribe. And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love you to leave us a rating and a review, as it really helps others to find the show. And if there's anything in the arts and culture landscape you think we should be talking about or investigating, please send me an email at charlotte@countryandtownhouse.co.uk. And don't forget to follow Country and Townhouse on social media. You can find the links to all our accounts in the podcast show notes. We'll be back on air with a new podcast at the same time next Friday. Have a lovely weekend. Goodbye.